Hey there, folks. Rob Hessler here with another episode of Art on the Air, my weekly Do Savannah special. This is an awesome interview I've got lined up for you this week. I spoke with Thomas Mintz, a 70-year-old painter who has had an incredible journey through his career, and he is now teaching classes simply titled Oil Painting with Thomas Mintz, where he is passing his techniques on to the next generation. And what is absolutely fascinating is that he can trace his knowledge back to people like Matisse and Picasso. Yes, I know it sounds a little bit unbelievable that somebody here in Savannah would have that level of skill and technique and have some connection to those famous artists of the past, but it is true, and he's going to tell you all about that here in this interview, and I think you're really going to enjoy listening to him tell it. There's so many little weird, fun characters in the stories as well, and he's just really a fascinating guy, so enjoy listening to that. Wanted to mention that you can catch past episodes of Art on the Air and my corresponding Art Off the Air column right here at dosavannah.com, including last week's episode with Morgan Adler, a painter. It was a really nice conversation with her as well. And previously, I spoke with Stella Renee von Schmid about all of her processes with her eco-dyed art and everything that goes along with that. And it was really a fun conversation with Stella as well. So catch those here, along with all of the writing that I do. Again, dosavannah.com will have everything that you need here for your local arts coverage. But let's get into this interview with Thomas Mintz, talking about his process, his background, and his new endeavor, Oil Painting with Thomas Mintz. Here we go. Rob Hessler here with Art on the Air Field Notes. I am speaking by telephone with Thomas Mintz, and we are going to be talking about his new endeavor, Oil Painting with Thomas Mintz. He is teaching classes for students. But before we get into all of that, Thomas, I wanted to take a few steps back for those who are not quite familiar with you and your work, because you are a longtime artist. You grew up in Chicago, and you showed some artistic aptitude when you were young. And you kind of had a fateful meeting with a mentor in painter Bob Novak. How did he come to influence your work?
Well, I first met him. I should mention that in my teens, I became involved in music, you know, playing bass and dance and stuff. And I became involved in the Chicago blues scene while still in high school, playing with a fellow named Chicago Slim. And there was one guy who was at every performance. He looked to me like a middle-aged guy. He was probably in his 30s, but I was 17, right? So he looked older.
Right.
And he loved the blues. But he was an artist, I found out. And so I began to talk with him. And I was painting a lot at that time. I've been painting all my life, basically. And I thought I was a real hotshot painter. And I showed him some of my stuff. And basically, very kindly and gently told me I really didn't know much at all. And I was smart enough to realize that how much I didn't know. And he took me on. I don't want to say as a student, he was my mentor. I spent a lot of time at his house watching him paint. He would take art books and he would diagram. I'd bring them over, right? And he would draw all over my art books and with diagrams and arrows and things. And basically, he was a student of Hans Hofmann. Hofmann was the most important teacher in the United States, having been in Paris in the early part of the 20th century and knew Matisse and Picasso and started his own school. And in the 1930s, fled the Nazis and went to New York, where he became a hugely influential teacher to all the great abstract expressionists. They were all influenced by him. And he influenced my teacher, who actually studied with him in Provincetown in the 1950s, and taught me the philosophy of painting, by which I still paint. It can be very involved, but basically it's just doing poetic three-dimensional compositions on a two-dimensional surface where everything rhymes. And like I said, I could go into it in a lot more depth, which I do when I'm teaching people. But he totally opened my eyes to what painting really was about.
And at that time, you were doing mostly like very realistic work, right? You were pretty much just a realist painter at that point. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, realism with overtones of bright colors and impressionism and stuff like that. But I could paint very realistically at an early age. I got my first training, I think, when I was 10, I got a big box of paints, which is the ancestor of the box of paints I still have. I've just been small colors since I got it, and they sent me to art schools, adult art schools, when I was in fourth grade, and that was where in River Forest near Chicago, and that's where I learned the fun of, learning my craft. I learned perspective and the color wheel and to draw from life and how to put paint on a canvas and make it stick and how to work in pastels and watercolors. All that stuff I learned at a really early age, and I always got a lot of attention for painting, and naturally, I love painting. I mean, I just love doing it more than anything else. So I was doing, like, murals and pizza parlors when I was a teenager, and, just anything to get this work out there. And it was basically realistic at the time. And when I met Bob, I was still a realist painter. There was another big influence I want to mention, too. I needed a job out of high school. And so I got a job in an animation studio in Chicago. This is old school animation, not like computer animation.
Yeah.
Where we use tracing paper and acetate, and the animators would draw on tracing paper and give it to me, and I'd put acetate over it and ink it and paint it in on the back. And the big influence of that is that when I was working on my own stuff and making alterations, I began to use tracing paper off of my compositions, and I still do. And then I began to do overlaid compositions, and that's greatly influenced how I paint. And music has been a big influence, too. I love polyphonic music. It's my favorite, like Bach, for example, is a perfect example. Multiple compositions going on simultaneously, but creating a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. And I would say that's what I do with painting. I have multiple compositions going on simultaneously.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that because it's a really interesting term that you use, polyocular compositions. But before we get into that specific detail, after growing up in Chicago, you ended up moving to New York City. And from what I understand, that's when you really started delving into some abstract compositions and where you developed that polyocular style. So talk a little bit about that sort of transition and the 25 years that you ended up spending in and around New York City.
Okay, well, let me say this. I developed that style while I was still in Chicago.
Okay, okay.
I'm 70 years old, and I developed that style in my late 20s, early 30s when I was still in Chicago. I moved to New York City in 1985 when I was 35. So by the time I moved to New York, I had a fully developed style. I spent some time in Europe with some music. I was playing with a band in Europe, and I came back. And I had never drawn. When I was a kid, I didn't draw like a kid. I drew more like an adult. And I thought, I've got to learn how to draw like a kid. And so I'd always been glued to realism where I would look at something and draw it, and I was good at that. But I wanted to learn how to draw without looking at anything. And so I did. And I forced myself just to draw from organic shapes and abstract, actually, basically, non-objective work. And that's when I began to employ the polyocular. It's a made-up word, but I use it because it's understandable, trying to explain what opinions look like to people when you can't show them the painting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a handy word to say multiple compositions going on at the same time. So I developed that style in Chicago in my late 20s, early 30s, and when I moved to New York in 1985, I was fully developed in that style. In fact, I had my first one-man show less than a year after I got to New York in that style of painting, which is a totally non-objective, abstract kind of style, but very dense painting. And a woman came to one of my exhibitions in New York City, either my first or second one, and she said, would you like to do sets and costumes for modern dance? And I said, sure, it sounds like fun. And it was. And it was a great experience. And we did it on the Lower East Side, and I would have this huge mural that I painted and then have the dancers wearing body stockings that I painted, and they're moving around the painting. It was cool. But then I began to draw the models. And I hadn't been It's been years since I've drawn realistically, and with the models and these costumes I designed, I decided I would paint them, and so I did, and they began to model for me. So I introduced a layer of realism into this multi-compositional style I had. So I would have an abstract layer, then a realistic layer, then maybe another abstract layer on top of that. So that led me to the record I'm still working in right now. So now I employ realism again in my work. Sometimes it's floral. I went through a period where I was drawing sculptures a lot. I used to go to the Met in New York and just draw in the ancient Greek and Roman room and draw the Rodins because it was free and they didn't move, right? You know, so
mm-hmm.
I could do a lot of drawings of those, and it was just a practice drawing, basically. But then I began to realize, I could turn these into paintings. So I did a sculptural series. I bought my wife at the time some flowers, mantle. They got all wilted and dead, about to be thrown out. And I said, "Wait a minute, those are beautiful. I like the dead wilted flowers better than the fresh ones." So I did a whole series for a year of dead wilted roses. But I always went back to the figure. My last series before this current one was of horses. I was in Paris and just killing time. The gendarme in Luxembourg joined these bronze horses just for exercise. And once again, you know, I decided to turn them into a series of paintings. But I always go back to the figure. Over the years in New York, and I was like nearly 30 years in New York City in Manhattan, had numerous shows. I would go to drawing sessions with live models. And I did that here in Savannah at the studio school. So I have literally hundreds and hundreds of figure studies. So I've decided to turn those into my paintings now. So the last year or so, that's what I've been doing.
You know, this is such great insight into your work, too, because there's a couple of things, like, and having spent a lot of time looking at your work, and listeners who are interested can head over to thomasmitz.com and see a really nice array of your portfolio. But looking at your work, like, I can see the little details that you're talking about now. Like, when you're talking about doing the set design and the costume design and these figures moving in front of the background, like, I can almost see that in your paintings now. Like, I see how you're talking about these multiple layers. Like, I can imagine seeing that play out in a, you know, three-dimensional performance art space. And when I look at your paintings now after thinking about that background information, it's like I can almost see the movement of the figures on there. Or, for example, you mentioned taking studies of the bronze horses. And I know that series of your work as well, those horses, and they're beautiful. But when I looked at them at first, I was like, these look very sculptural. They look very static in a way, like they're like frozen in time. And I can see now, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you can really see that. So I would be interested in hearing how our listening audience, after hearing you sort of explain your background, how much it really does tie into the work that you're doing today, even though that was, you know, years ago, really.
Yes, it was. It was a few years ago, I guess, that I was in Paris. And I just draw all the time, you know. I draw whatever's handy. I draw live models when I have them. If I don't, I'll draw landscapes or flowers or sculptures or whatever. I see whatever I find visually stimulating. And then I have these drawings lying around, many of them, and I often just start sorting through them and seeing them. And I see them as paintings. And so then I turn them into paintings.
That's another thing I love about your work here, too. And we are going to get into oil painting with Thomas Mitz and, you know, everything that you've got going on now. But I do love that if you go onto your website, too, you can see really great examples of that where there is, and I believe it's charcoal. It's a charcoal drawing, and that gets converted into a painting. And then sometimes even like a second painting that is very similar, but it uses totally different color scheme. And it's almost like, you know, when I was flipping through your portfolio, I'm like kind of doing a double take, like, oh, did I see that one already? Oh, no, this is a totally different take on it. And I love the sort of precision and accuracy and attention to detail in those pieces and how you do that.
Well, thank you. I do actually almost always make at least two versions of every painting. I don't attack a white canvas, you know, with a paintbrush. Never. What I do is I work things out on paper first. I work in transparent glazes. I do underpaintings and then transparent glazes. And when you work out a style like that, to repaint it is a pain in the neck. It means wiping things out and repainting them white again. Because glazing, I love glazing. I learned that from a painter in Chicago named Ed Paschke, very famous painter in Chicago. And he was very generous for this time. And I would hang out on his studio and watch him. And I learned advanced oil painting techniques from him. But that's all I have. The best color control, and I can do amazing things by just glazing colors over colors, transparent glazes. But I work things out on paper first. And my drawings, I often draw on tinted paper with charcoal and white charcoal in a kind of a Renaissance style, and just because it gives me the most information to embark on a painting with. So, but then I still use tracing paper. Sometimes I take, when I'm doing figures, I'll take all these drawings and I'll trace them out on tracing paper, cut them out, paint the backs white, and have paper dolls that I flip around on the page until I get the composition I like. My latest style, I call it riffing on mannerism. I love mannerism, this style that came after, high Renaissance, El Greco, Caravaggio, you know, all the great mannerist painters, where you have a lot of figures floating through space often.
and in very theatrical compositions.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that lately a lot just because I love the human figure, the male and female both, and I employ them in these compositions, incorporating the abstraction on top of it and underneath it. So, and then I transfer it to a canvas. And this is a technique I'm teaching my students, really. You don't mind me getting into this right now.
Let's set the stage on that because, you know, we're talking about a new endeavor for you, oil painting with Thomas Mitz, but really this is something that you've been teaching here in Savannah since you moved here, essentially, 5 years ago. And you were doing that at the studio school for a long time, which, of course, was forced to close earlier this year because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so now you're kind of going off and you're doing your own thing. So how has that process been? Before we get into like what you're teaching, I mean, how has the process been? Because, you know, when we were chatting before we went on the air, you had, you know, you mentioned that you kind of had 30 students before, and now you've got 3, and you're kind of resetting the stage for your teaching here in Savannah. What's that process been like, the transition?
Well, I've had some of my students have been very, very loyal and stayed with me no matter what. But, you know, since the coronavirus, we've had to change the whole operation. You know, we wear masks and we socially distance and we all stay healthy. So I've only had a couple students. A year ago, last January, I did have 30 students. I was teaching in South Carolina and at the studio school, and it was wonderful. But that's all changed. But I rented this studio space to teach in right across the hall from my own studio, where we can do 4 students at a time with 6 feet between them and wearing masks and good ventilation. So that's my goal, really, is to teach 4 students a day. That's about all I can safely handle. And with 4 students, they get a lot of personal attention.
Right.
So teaching, I love teaching. I have to correct something you said. I've only been teaching, I started a year ago last January in studio school. I was drawing there in the drawing sessions, and Tatiana von Tauber mentioned she needed an oil painting teacher, and I volunteered my services, and she was a little skeptical, but I hadn't taught, I had really taught before, not a class, you know, one-on-one I instructed some people. But I've been wanting to teach for a very long time. I feel so lucky and so privileged to have had wonderful mentors, particularly Bob Novak, who taught me what painting was all about. I mean, let's face it, he studied under Hoffman. Hoffman was in Matisse's school. This is a direct line of really important knowledge. And then this guy Paschke in Chicago taught me advanced painting techniques, oil painting techniques, glazing and all that, very, very important to me. And I've always wanted to pass these things on. And what I've learned to do is to, if I may elaborate a little bit on the teaching process.
Yes, please do. Please do.
Well, when I started teaching, one of the first things I did was look at every online video about teaching just to see how other people did it. And I would say close to 100% of them were demonstrations, or, you know, I'll paint this and you paint like I paint it. And I don't do that at all. And also, they were often wet on wet, where you're painting wet paint on top of wet paint, you know, and that's the most common form of teaching oil painting. And it's not, I think, the best, or even, it's certainly not the oldest. And it's, I have more of a Renaissance technique. I tell my students they have to come up with their own vision of what a beautiful painting is. And some of them say, I don't know what to paint. Or they often say to me, I want to get to the point where I can paint a base. So I said, okay, let's start off with a self-portrait. And oh, I can't do that, but yes, you can. You know, I just show them how to do it. I build their confidence. I give them the technique. Often we'll work from photographs, self-portraits, family members, pets, whatever they want, whatever's important to them that they want to make a beautiful painting of. That's my job, is to have them realize a beautiful painting from their own soul and imagination, not what I'm imposing on them necessarily. I will give them guidance and help them find what they're looking for. So we often work from photographs and collages of photographs or drawings that they've made. What we usually do is I use the same technique I use. I stain a canvas, purple, blue, brown, whatever, a very thin watercolor stain. Then we'll transfer the photograph or the drawing onto the canvas, usually using a grid. I make a grid and show them how, if they have a photograph they want to turn into portrait, all they have to do is make a grid on the photo and a grid on the canvas and draw it in square by square. And they're amazed. There it is, you know. And first thing we'll do is we'll paint in nothing but white, so the forms emerge, then we'll paint in the dark tones until we get a really good monotone, and then we start putting the colors on. You know, we'll use transparent glazes, we'll use opaque paints. But the important thing about that is that every stage is good before we go to the next stage. In other words, if you're doing a wet-on-wet technique and you
have a bad day, it's a train wreck often. You know, you've ruined your painting. Nobody ever ruins a painting because we don't go to the next step till the first step looks really good.
Right.
And then the canvas dries and we go on, and then we work on it. And if we don't like the colors, we can wipe them off and we still have what's underneath, you see. And this is really the original oil painting technique that was developed in north of the Alps in the 1400s and 1300s and then transferred later down to Italy, to Tuscany, and into Venice. That's how they would paint back then. They would. If you look at Leonardo's, he was notorious for not finishing paintings. So there's a number of paintings that he just walked away from. And you can see the underpainting. There's one in the Uffizi of a virgin and child with all the wise men around it. And I can't think of the name of it right now. But it's all the monotones. And then you can see how he would do the glazes and on top. Glaze upon glaze upon glaze until he got his final incredible, brilliant, beautiful results. And we employ something close to that. You know, we first work out a composition on paper, and then we transfer that composition to a stained canvas, and then we start putting in the lights and putting in the darks. And at any stage, we can stop and wipe it off and do it again. Oil paint is very forgiving. You can change it. You can fix it. It's a wonderful medium to paint in. I show people how to paint and how to do this technique, which is the oldest oil painting technique there is, actually.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. If you want to paint as good as Leonardo da Vinci, you just got to take oil painting with Thomas Mitz.
I don't promise anybody that they're going to do that. I can show them the technique that he used.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I want to, you know, and I'm curious here because, you know, and I maybe have made an assumption here, an incorrect assumption here, is that, you know, with the level of skill that you possess in your long, long career of painting, I sort of assumed that you were really teaching advanced students, but it sounds to me like you're really working with all levels of skill and ability.
All levels, from beginners, retired people, not children, but, you know, high school kids, people, many first-time painters who never painted before. And when I find a student who's more advanced, then, of course, I work with them on that level. Maybe they have their own painting technique. They don't need my advice on technique, but I can share the wisdom that I received from Novak and Peschke about Hans Hoffman and Matisse and Picasso and all the things they said in private that never got written in the books that I heard, well, admittedly third-hand, but, you know, I know it. I know what they're doing. If I have one gift, it's that I can read paintings pretty well, and you can. It's been wonderful. I'm the luckiest man in the world. Growing up in Chicago, had wonderful painters, great painters. The Harry Huda whole group, Roger Brown, Carl Worsham, Matt Dashby, just wonderful, wonderful painters. And let's not forget the Art Institute of Chicago. I mean, my God, I've been to every museum, not every, but I've been to most of the great museums and the United States and Europe. But my favorite is still the Art Institute of Chicago. I remember it was the first time my parents wouldn't take me there. I think they were nervous about the nudes or something. But I snuck in there one time when I was 12 years old. And I walked up those steps in a room full of Van Goghs with yellow skies and Renoirs and Cezannes and Lagrange left by Seurat, all in front of me for the first time. First time I had ever really seen real. I'd seen bad paintings in person. And I'd seen reproductions of paintings, but just to be overwhelmed by that, just amazing experience. So having that as those paintings to look at all the time and study and having great teachers and people who loved painting and being in a culture of painting was a wonderful thing. And I moved to New York in the 80s, and that was a time when painters ruled socially. You know, it was a great time. There were lots of galleries and lots of painters. I was warned that I'd have a hard time in New York, but the first dealer I showed my work to, he said, "How come I haven't heard of you?" I had a show in less than a year. And had a good career in New York. I love New York City. I really do.
Well, I got to tell you.
Too. I come here on a visit, and I decided I love this. It's a great city. You know, it's very artistic and very beautiful and a lot of sensitive people, so I'm very happy here.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you. I tell you what, you know, I'm not really a painter here, but your passion and your... I'm feeling this right now. I mean, it kind of makes me want to take a class. And let me ask you that. I'm actually really serious. If people are interested in taking one of your classes and getting some training from you, how do people go about doing that? What's the best way for people to make that happen?
There's two ways of contacting me. One is through my phone number, which I'll be happy to give out. Email me. I'm Thomas W. Mitz at Gmail. You know, THOMAS.
wmitz@gmail.com, and just email me, and that's probably the simplest, best way to get a hold of me. Or call Starlandia, and they have my information at Starlandia, Clinton's Art Supply Store. Clinton and I are good friends, and he's been very encouraging with this. In fact, he designed the poster and flyer that I'm using for this school. Or look me up on social media, on Facebook. You can contact me through Facebook or Messenger.
Mm. Well, that's awesome, Thomas, and I really am excited, and I really do think, and I'm glad that you're doing these classes and everything like that. I think losing the studio school was a big blow, and there's been a lot of loss in the art scene here since the pandemic began. So it's really nice to hear that there is, you know, a new seed planted here as far as opportunity for artists to grow and to learn something new. I really appreciate you coming on here today on Art on the Air to talk to me about it.
My pleasure. I'm really happy to do it.
That's all the time we have for this week's episode of Art on the Air with your host, Rob Hessler. Listen every Wednesday for our live show, broadcasting from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on 107.5 FM, Savannah Soundings, and worldwide at WRUU.org. And you can catch past episodes on the WRUU station archives on our website, as well as on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. We'll talk to you next week, where we'll have another batch of Art on the Air.